A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 3, 1991, in the series The Sign of the Cross, The Way of Jesus, entitled The Cruciform Life. The scripture readings are 1 Peter 2, verses 16 through 25, and John 15, verses 1 through 17. The texts for the sermon are 1 Peter 2, verse 21, and John 15, verse 13. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The sign of the cross marks the way of Jesus. Jesus died because of the way he lived. The way he lived led him to crucifixion. And he calls us to follow him. Take up your cross daily and follow me. Paul said it this way, I have been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, but the life that I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Peter, in our text, sets forth the example of Jesus and says, that example was intended that we might follow in Jesus' steps. And so, during this Lenten season, when our focus is the cross, there are any number of places to which we could turn in order to find this very clear gospel truth that the disciples of Jesus are to find in Jesus' way a model to walk the way that Jesus walked, to follow in Jesus' steps. That's clear. The concrete contours of that way are not so clear. And it is not for me to tell you what that way will look like for you, nor for you to tell me, for finally I believe that we must all find our way. What it means for us to follow Jesus. There's an old ancient devotional book, very popular, produced down through the centuries from around the 15th or 16th century, I think, Thomas A. Kempis's The Imitation of Christ. I don't like the word imitation because I don't think that conveys what we are called to do in terms of following the steps of Jesus. To imitate, at least in its nuance, conveys to me that I would try to do what Jesus would do and say what Jesus would say, that it would be becoming a clone, as it were, of Jesus. I don't think it's that simple. Jesus lived in a context of history so far removed from mine that for me to try to duplicate, to become a little Jesus, might simply not do the trick. I think it's not to imitate Jesus, but to find, to discern the mind of Jesus, the attitude of Jesus, the spirit of Jesus, and then in an entirely changed situation, to determine my concrete actions so that my actions would reflect the fact that I'm a disciple of Jesus. The text from 1 Peter 2:21. He has left you an example that you should follow in his steps, is in the midst of a context that will indicate clearly that we've got to do some translating from then to now. If you were to go a bit earlier than where we began our reading, you would find that Peter says, submit yourselves to every human institution for the sake of the Lord. To every human institution. Every head of an institution would love that still to be the case. I might even like that. And then in the 18th verse, servants, accept the authority of your masters. And Peter goes on to say, not only submit to your masters as servants or slaves, but if you step out of line and they beat you, no big deal, your problem. But if with God in your mind you do right and they beat you, still, take it. And then, if we would move out of the second chapter and into the third chapter, Peter goes on to say, in the same way, you women must accept the authority of your husbands. Now, up until then, perhaps he was preaching, but at that point he got to meddling, didn't he? Fellas, for your reference for this afternoon, the discussion can be based on that's 1 Peter 3:1. Some woman didn't get my humor in the first service and said, how can you say that without saying 1 Peter 3:7? Well, 1 Peter 3:7 says that husbands ought to love their wives. But I submit to you that that was a big advance for Peter and for Paul, who also wrote the same thing. But I don't think it's where we are today. It seems to me that it's not submission and love, but it's kind of reciprocity and mutuality. I think it ought to be. Do women agree? Almost. Well, the context is so different. The world is so different. Peter, Paul, the New Testament was so far ahead of where the society in general was. But the gospel has worked its ferment in society so that slavery is no longer an acceptable institution in human relationships according to the Christian gospel as we understand it. And as far as submitting to every human institution, in a day in which the third world has come to recognize its own need for dignity and its own place in the sun, where liberation theology is about, because we recognize that all humankind ought to receive a measure of decency and dignity, and in a day in which feminism has finally gotten through to us and revealed to us the oppression of a patriarchal culture, in such a day, just to take Peter's word, which for him was a far advance from where society in general was, and to try and simply put that on us today is not to understand the passage. It is simply to reiterate the passage without understanding, and that's never good. That can get us into all kinds of trouble. So, to follow in Jesus' steps today, when we are citizens of the United States of America, the most powerful nation the world has ever known, not an underdog, not an occupied power, to be a part of the world scene of which we're a part, with the insights that have been gained over 2,000 years as the gospel has worked its ferment, what does it mean for you and for me today to follow in Jesus' steps? How do we discern the concrete contours of discipleship in our day? Dietrich Bonhoeffer, my hero, who comes out every Lent. Oh, that's just the cover. It's a rather badly used book. It's almost as tattered as my Bible because it gets almost as much use. But Bonhoeffer, in prison now, in his letters and papers from prison, struggled with that thing. What do we mean by God? Not in the first place an abstract belief in God's omnipotence. This is not a genuine experience of God. but a partial extension of the world. Encounter with Jesus Christ, implying a complete orientation of human being in the experience of Jesus as one whose only concern is for others. This concern of Jesus for others, this was the experience of transcendence. This freedom from self, maintained to the point of death, the sole ground of his omnipotence, omniscience, and ubiquity. Faith is participation in this being of Jesus. Our relation to God is not a religious relationship to a supreme being. But Dietrich, it is. And it's easier that way, Dietrich. It's more comfortable that way, you see. Religious relationship to a supreme being far off. No, Bonhoeffer says, it's not a religious relationship to a supreme being, absolute in power and goodness. So that's a spurious conception of transcendence. What is it then? A life for others through participation in the being of God. The transcendence consists not in tasks beyond our scope and power, but in the nearest thing at hand. God in human form, not as in other religions, in animal form or abstract form. No. One existing for the other, and hence the crucified. Well, what shape does a cruciform life take today for you and for me in a world like ours? A cruciform life, a life marked by the cross, a life trying to follow in the steps of Jesus. What does that mean concretely for me and for you today? That's the question. I can define the question better than I can supply the answer. I suppose that because of our present captivation, almost obsession with the Gulf War and all of that, I was thinking of Bonhoeffer particularly. In 1939, you may remember, I guess I rehearsed this story for you at least once a year, but in 1939 he was studying at Union Seminary in New York, and Hitler was at the apex of his thrust, beginning to ravish Europe. And the great Reinhold Niebuhr, professor at Union, pleaded with Bonhoeffer to stay in this country and to continue his study. He was so brilliant, had so much promise. He said, stay here in order that when the war's over, you may go back, well prepared. And for a month, Bonhoeffer wrestled with that decision, and then he took the last possible boat across the Atlantic. He said, if I do not join my people in their suffering, I will not be able to participate with my people in their restoration. I will not be able to be a part of the new day that will dawn. And he said, for me, I know not what others will do, but I must will the downfall of my own nation in order that Western civilization may live. For if I would will the success of my nation, it would be the end of Western civilization. The worm goes round, doesn't it? He went back. Now, he went back specifically as a Christian person, his Christianity needing to be lived out concretely in the society of which he was a part. And you know how he got in a network of those who saw the evil of Hitler and began to move to undercut that regime. He was imprisoned But the network of which he was a part was that group that sought the assassination of Hitler, which backfired while Bonhoeffer was in prison. You can read in his letters the distress of those days. First the anxious waiting as he knew the date was to arrive, and then the terrible disappointment when he learned that Hitler survived that attempt on his life. And then finally he himself hung in southern Germany just days before the American troops liberated that area. For Bonhoeffer, his concrete life was a reflection of his intention to follow Jesus. And his response to the call to follow Jesus involved getting bound up with a network of those who went to the extent of violence in order to end the life of Hitler because they saw the evil that Hitler was doing, and in order for the life of the world, they were willing to take that step of violence against this man. At the same time, there was a French Reformed pastor, André Trocmé. He was in a little French Alp village, Le Chambon. He, through his parish, made of that mountain village a city of refuge for Jews. They hid Jewish refugees, and then they would ferry those refugees to Switzerland in order that they might find safety, because the Germans dominated France and set up their own puppet government. Trocmé was French, but his mother was German. He could pass in France or Germany. And in his diary in 1939, he has an entry in which he says, Shall I infiltrate the Nazi regime in order that I might be able to kill Adolf Hitler? And then Trocmé, in his diary, concludes, "No, that course is not open to me. To do so would be to separate myself from Jesus." And Trocmé, instead of taking that route of infiltration and assassination, found his discipleship to be marked by creating a space of safety and refuge for those who were being haunted by the Nazi regime, the Gestapo. Now, for Trocmé, it was not an easy way. He was warned by the puppet government in France. The whole village was put at risk because of what he was doing, what he had inspired the village to do. He was even warned by the authorities of the French Reformed Church, if you can believe. They came to him and pleaded with him to stop for the safety of the church. And he wouldn't do it. Now, what I'm saying to you is that Trocmé was no pushover. He said, "For me to assassinate Hitler would be to be separated from Jesus." He could not do what Bonhoeffer did. But Trocmé eventually was imprisoned. But you know, they don't like to hold imprisoned people like that. They're embarrassing to have behind bars. And so they came to him with a document and said, "If you'll just sign this and swear allegiance to the regime, you may go free." He said, "I cannot sign it." They said, "You'll rot in prison." He said, "I'll rot in prison." At the centennial of Bonhoeffer's birth, just a few short years ago, Eberhard Bethke, the biographer of Bonhoeffer, was asked, as in this country as he came to speak, he was asked, "How could Dietrich Bonhoeffer have identified himself with a movement of violence that attempted to take the life of Hitler? How could he do that as a Christian?" Well, Bethke said, "Tough question." But he said, I wonder if that's even the question. If you see someone going up and down your street, shooting people, can you just sit there and let it happen, or do you do something? Philip Hawley, who tells the story of Andre Trocmé, says that after he wrote the story, the book entitled Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed, he got a terribly angry letter from someone who said, you made him into a pacifist. You exalt, you lift up this creating of this city of refuge. But you could have had cities of refuge all over Europe, but someone had to stop Hitler. And Philip Hawley says, that's right. Well, I guess I think about all of that because what would you have done if you had been in Iraq, in Baghdad, and Hussein had walked down the street? Now, I don't mean just a kind of response out of the gut, the anger, but I mean, what if you had had time to consider, I am a follower of Jesus. I believe in love, and that only love can break the cycle of violence. But here I am in 1991 in the city of Baghdad, and there's Saddam Hussein. What form would your discipleship have taken? Would you have been Bonhoeffer? Or would you have been Trocmé? Was Bonhoeffer right and Trocmé wrong, or was Trocmé right and Bonhoeffer wrong? Is it possible for us to judge another in that existential situation? And once again, what form would your discipleship have taken these past weeks in Baghdad? Peter says, Jesus, when he was reviled, reviled not again, abused, became not abusive. And of course we know that when he was actually on the cross, he was able to summon what must be the grace of God to say, forgive them. Now that is bedrock gospel. That's got to be the most profound gospel word there is. But what do you do in a world that isn't there yet? Bonhoeffer had to make his decision. Trocmé had to make his. And you and I have to make ours. It's not so easy, is it? I want to resign from being a Christian at least once every Lenten season, when I decide it really isn't possible anymore. Nancy said to me, as she usually does when I'm leaving the house, how is it? And I said, it's awful, as it usually is. And she said, what's the matter? And I said, well, I don't preach as much as I believe. And I don't even live as much as I preach. And that makes it hard to be here. But considerations like that sometimes can be so heavy that they simply immobilize us in our guilt and despair. And I don't want to do that. Because finally we are embraced by the grace of God, and all that stems all the gospel that stems out of the love of God for this world and for us. And so I want to remember John 15 as well, where Jesus says, "Abide in me." Bonhoeffer committed his cause to God. Trockney committed his cause to God. Both of them were convinced that it wasn't simply the horizontal plane where the historical players were at work, but God was involved. Both of them committed their cause to God. So must we. No matter what the concrete shape of our discipleship may take, it must be that which is offered to the God who is going before us, who works in this world, whose Spirit is moving and moving toward world community. Shalom. Pray, God. And then Jesus also said, bear fruit. Abide in me, bear fruit. And so I hear that call to do something, to make a difference, to count. And then finally he says, all of this is in order that your joy may be full. Joy. Joy. Bonhoeffer, Trockney, Jesus were marked by remarkable freedom. Remarkable freedom. Jesus had a way of putting Pilate on trial because of Jesus' freedom in the truth. Pastor Niemöller, famous German pastor, called before the Gestapo, lived to tell the story of how the Gestapo agent fidgeted, terribly nervous, chain-smoking, because the interrogator was put on trial by one free in the truth. And Andre Trockney could look at the representative of that puppet government and simply say, "No, I don't sign that. You rot in jail, yes, but with my soul intact." And in that, there's a kind of freedom and a kind of joy. I think God must have a sense of humor because He stays with us. And just because we are not all the way there, just because we fumble and stumble and stammer and stutter, doesn't mean that in this Lent 1991, we cannot at least seek to clarify the question. And maybe here or there, make some concrete step that will seek to bring our lives into conformity with the way of Jesus. Jesus invites us to go His way.